Welcome to The Dream Show. I'm Jane Teresa Anderson, and this is episode 220. And our guest today is Jan from Western Australia. And Jan brings a wonderful dream that sounds more like a fairy tale, and like all fairy tales, is actually really quite scary. And she does wake up before we get to the happy ending, so I was on the edge of my seat listening to this fairy tale dream, and I'm sure you will be too. The reason I can tell you this is that, as you know, when we have a guest on the show, we ask the guest to bring a dream that I have not heard before. So I actually don't know anything about the dream until we start recording. But of course, we've just done that, and I'm now back at the beginning of the show, adding this bit to the beginning. So you've got that coming up, Jan's dream, and what does it mean? How does it relate to her life? I would say how does it relate to her life now, but she actually brought a dream from 30 years ago, from 1989, and we were able to relate that to what was happening for her at the time and go from there. So you've got that to enjoy. First up, before we just go there, a reminder of the websites. If you haven't listened to The Dream Show before, or you haven't been to my websites for a long time, I have two websites. One is janeteresa.com, that's Teresa without an H, where you can listen to every episode of The Dream Show that's ever been. That is now 220 if you're listening to this in real time and ongoing, where you can read loads and loads of blogs about dreams, and where you can also find out about my books and my services. So my services include all sorts of things which revolve around dream therapy, mentoring regardless of dreams, and helping you to understand and interpret your own dreams. And then the other website is the Dream Academy, and that website address is dream-academy-online.com. And that's where you go if you would like to do my online courses, where you go along at your own pace and you learn how to interpret your own dreams step by step. And then there are other courses you can go all the way up to learning how to be a dream therapist. Or you can find me on Facebook or increasingly on Instagram. But let's now go to the more exciting part of today's episode and on with Jan's dream. Welcome to The Dream Show, Jan. How are you this morning?
Jan Teresa, I'm fine, thank you. Excellent.
And you're in Western Australia?
I am indeed. I'm well, about 250 k's south of Perth, I've been told is one of the most remote capital cities in the world, so we're tucked down in the southwest of Western Australia.
Sounds like a really lovely place to dream.
It is. It's a great little hamlet that I live in, or a little parish, and yes, I'm very, very happy here.
Well, thank you for putting your hand up to be a guest on the show. And of course, as always, I have no idea what dream any guest is going to bring. So what have you got for us?
Well, I've got it. Let me say that I've been recording my dreams since 1983. I mean, it's the dim, dark ages. This dream I had on the 20th of August, 1989. And although I gave it a title, in retrospect, looking back, I wonder why I gave it that title, because it doesn't seem to fit with the dream at all. So my question first to you, before I tell you the dream, is do you want to know what the title is before I give you the dream, or shall we wait until after the dream?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I'm going to judge by your hesitation to give the title that it might give too much away, so I'm going to say let's leave the title till later.
Okay, that's fine. All right, so the dream goes like this. I appear to live in a small tin hut, comprising of a small anteroom and a bedroom. The hut is set in the middle of a clearing in a forest. Each night, a tall, rather beautiful young man, very muscular, with long blonde hair, walks by the hut. At first, that's all he does. But I always awake, waiting for him to pass. Strangely, I'm afraid of him, although he does nothing threatening. Sometimes if the moon is bright, I will actually leave my bed and watch him. He cannot see me. And only when I actually see he has gone can I totally relax. Interestingly, the door both to my bedroom and the anteroom front door is always open. One night I see that he has a huge wolf-like dog with him. This time he pauses before the hut, but still does not enter. Night after night he comes, now always with the dog, and I become increasingly scared. Then one night he enters the anteroom, where the only piece of furniture is a large, tall chest with many drawers, like a filing cabinet. Curiously, for some reason at this stage, I feel he has lived here himself. He opens the drawer and takes out a document and leaves. The dog does not come in with him. The next night he comes yet again, and this time he brings the dog in with him. He stands in the anteroom looking into my bedroom, but does not actually enter the bedroom. I can smell the dog. It is terribly unpleasant, and I think of death, and I'm terrified. But after a while, they leave. The next night, the moon is very, very bright, and I hear them approaching and run silently to the front door, which I lock with a large key. Standing in the dark in the anteroom, I watch as he tries the handle. My heart is racing, and I feel ill with fright, but nothing further happens. He doesn't attempt to break in, and shortly after he leaves with the dog. At this point, I realize it is a dream and that I'm not enjoying myself, and I wake up.
I wonder whether the dream would have gone on from there if you hadn't noticed.
I wasn't having fun, so
no.
I opted out.
I get the feeling that probably was the end of the dream and you probably were beginning to come into wakefulness there. Beautifully told, captivating. You know, it's got kind of fairy tale elements, hasn't it? Especially with sort of being in the woods and the wolf and the fear and the so beautifully told. So Jan, all of that was in one dream, which is amazing. The, you know, like the next day and then the next day and the next day. That's quite unusual, that in a dream, that feeling of that amount of time passing, you know, and the feeling of day after day after day. That is quite amazing in itself, isn't it?
Well, is it? I mean, you know, my knowledge of dreams is not that great that I would pick up on that sort of thing. So that is curious.
It is. So obviously it's a long time ago that you had this dream, nearly 30 years, 30 years actually. Yeah, 30 years ago. So as everyone listening in knows, and as you know, the dream will refer to the day or two before the dream, since our dreams are processing our recent conscious and unconscious experiences. And then in that processing, we're also looking way back into our own past, you know, comparing our recent experiences with all our past experiences, and then kind of projecting forward a little bit, how are we going to handle the future based on where I'm at now? So there's that kind of sense. So this will require you to cast your mind back about 30 years as we go through this. I just finding it hard to pull myself out at the moment out of the fairy tale, you know, the moon and the wolf, and maybe wolves howling at the moon, but I'm going to do that, an almighty wrench, and start at the top of the dream. The dreams often, you know, I think one really good way to approach a dream is to begin to look at everything in the dream as representing something about the dreamer.
Right, okay.
So if we start at the beginning with a small tin hut in quite a small building with an anteroom and a bedroom, and right in the middle of a clearing in a forest, there's this real sense of something small but very centred. You know, it's right in the clearing, right in the middle of a forest, right in the centre. And, you know, often our bedroom is like the centre, not physically the centre of the house, but, you know, it's where we sleep, it's where we dream, it's where we rest. And maybe in many ways it's where we're closest to our true selves, because it's where we dream, where we're not out in the world, you know, trying to be things that we may not be. Mm-hmm. So there's a sense for me at the beginning of the dream that this is a time when you really wanted to get right back down to the core of your being or your dreaming mind is taking you right back into the core of your being. You may even have done a lot of clearing within yourself, done a bit of personal work, and you find yourself right in the middle, right in the center. And you've got a situation of there's my bedroom, my dreaming space, my resting space, and an anteroom, a small room that separates perhaps the big bad world outside from my sleeping space. It's this anteroom, this kind of porchway. In dreams, we sometimes also have plays on words. So even though it's ante as an A-N-T-E room, I wonder whether there's a sense of against, you know, A-N-T-I here, against the room, or anti something, something I'm anti about, something I'm feeling, you know, negative about. But you also see yourself in this dream as a small tin hut. What does a tin hut mean to you?
Well, not a lot, actually. I was aware, even way back then, that house or dwelling sort of referred to the self. I was aware of that. But my house wasn't small, you know, so I just don't know how the small tin hut came up.
Mm. What kind of person would live in a tin hut as opposed to a brick hut or a straw hut or a mud hut?
Well, I would say a person that was probably financially compromised in one way, which is pretty much how I was at the time, I think. Yeah, so, you know, not someone who had a lot of money, that's what I would say.
That's possible. And I don't think it's Australian vernacular, but I think in some countries, and it may be in Britain, I'm not sure, tin is also, or in medieval times or Victorian times, tin was also another word for money, for cash, just out of interest. Yeah, probably because coins were made of tin. Yeah, but anyway, you're probably right there. So we have this situation perhaps at the time where you felt that you were maybe doing some personal work on yourself. And I say that because it's like the forest is a clearing, as if you've been clearing stuff out of your life in some sense, whether that's personal development or actual stuff. But clearing a space for yourself and seeing yourself as quite small and ready and maybe financially compromised. But like, it's where do we go from here, you know? And the next thing that happens is that the tall, blonde, muscular man walks by every night. And again, I keep coming back to the fact that that beginning of your dream, Jan, seems to me, I mean, we all, male and female, we all go to sleep. We all have a bedroom. We all dream. If we're lucky, we have a bedroom and a roof over our head. But there's something kind of feminine about that opening hut image to me. It seems I don't know whether it was, but it seems rounded. It seems like it's in the middle, in a clearing, in a forest. It seems rounded, and then by contrast you've got the male element walking by every night. And although you described him as if he's, you know, really tall and handsome and strong and kind of nice, you don't feel comfortable having him around and close to your tin hut, do you?
No. That's absolutely correct. Mm. Mm-hmm.
So if everyone in a dream represents something about ourselves, then he would have represented a part of yourself at that time, back in 1989. Very capable in terms of these tall and strong and muscular, and yet something that you were feeling a little bit anti about, a little bit scared of, a little bit at the beginning of the dream. Your fear moves into terror towards the end of the dream, but just at the beginning, a little bit scared about, and you're kind of pleased that he walks on by every night. And I'm wondering, at this stage, whether it's a sense of you weren't too keen to make contact with your male side. That's your left brain, your logic, your world of work, getting out there, engaging with the world, which again makes sense of being in the middle of a forest to begin with. He may represent the outer world, which you clearly had great strengths in, because, you know, you envisaged that part of yourself as tall and muscular and capable, but you wanted it to pass you by at the moment, that you weren't interested in really engaging this aspect of yourself at that time of the dream, or more than not interested, you were anti, you were scared of it. You didn't want to be engaging in the outer world or the male side or the logical side of life at that time, according to the dream. And as the dream goes by, you get more and more afraid. And then I love that there's the moon comes out at one stage and it's quite bright. And you watch him and you only relax when he's gone. And again, for me, you know, that the moon, especially the bright moon, it's something that comes out at night. So again, it's kind of more perhaps related to our dreams and our nighttime, maybe more related to our true self. And for many people see the moon as a very feminine, intuitive symbol. Is that how you see the moon?
Oh, absolutely, yes. Yes, totally. I have to say at this stage, if I can just cut in, so far you might as well have been sitting on my shoulder for what was happening in my life.
Yeah.
So continue, please.
Okay, I will. Thank you. So there's a sense at this stage in the dream that you've got the full moon is on, it's really bright, and you can watch him. You can see him, but he can't see you. So it's as if you're standing in your full feminine power there. You know, your bright feminine power, your full intuition. Your intuition is alert to your male side being around somewhere, but you being terrified of it. And you only feel relaxed when you don't have to engage with that aspect of your life or the outer world. And yet, your doors are always open. This is where you notice in the dream that the door from the anteroom and the bedroom is always open. So there's a sense here that you saw yourself as very open. Now, it's good to be open, but if we're too open, we may or may not be vulnerable to, you know, I guess there's a sort of setting of boundaries question mark can come up here. Ideally, we want to be open in life to all kinds of experiences so we can learn and engage. But on the other hand, sometimes we need to know when to be open, when to close the door a little bit, when to close the door, when to lock it. So there's a question there of, you know, you were feeling open and perhaps curious as well, but also noting that maybe you didn't always protect your boundaries. And then the wolf comes along. What do you see as the personality of that wolf in the dream? A wolf-like dog, sorry. When you obviously the dog had a wolf-like personality, but how else would you describe the personality of that dog?
The dog was very calm, collected, tranquil. It wasn't at all threatening. Visually, it was very beautiful. But no, it never threatened. It was just there. It seemed to be an extension of him.
Absolutely, yeah. That's a good observation, because I was going to say exactly the same. Definitely an extension of him. Calm, collected, tranquil but not threatening, beautiful. I was writing that down as you were talking and thinking exactly the same. So it's as if he, at this stage in the dream, he's symbolism kind of strengthens. It's not just the man representing all of that male side of you, which is actually not threatening, or you're not perceiving as threatening, even you're frightened of it, even though you're describing it as non-threatening. And yet it amplifies. It's not just the man now, it's the wolf-like dog. There's a double energy here. And your fear increases, even though logically you're thinking to yourself, there's no threat here. And I guess also when we bring an animal into a dream, that animal can represent more of our own animal instinct, or sometimes more of our emotions and thoughts and beliefs that we're not quite so consciously aware of. You know, we might feel the growl of a dog within us and not really be able to put words on what it is we want to growl at in life. Or, you know, we might feel the slipperiness of a snake within us, but not really be able to put words on where it is in life that we feel slippery. So often an animal will come into our dream when it's reflecting a deeper emotion or a more unconscious emotion, something that we really haven't got our heads around. So there's a sense here that you're really drawing on that in the dream and drawing down into it. So again, if everything and everyone in a dream represents part of your dream or represents something about the dreamer, then this dog, wolf-like dog, also represents an amazing power that you had at the time, but that you were scared of.
true. Oh, my goodness gracious me. Mm. Okay, right.
And then the man, but not the dog, enters the anteroom. And so he's getting closer, your fear increases, and you're still not sure whether he is a threat, you just don't like him this close. And again, I wonder whether he enters the anteroom as a kind of pun on what I'm anti and what I'm against here. But he's getting closer, and so your dreamy mind is not letting you away with this. It's keeping you asleep, and it's getting you to confront closer and closer and closer this energy that you just wish would walk on by and leave you alone. And in the same way, it's making you confront your fear and later on your terror of this. You know, and so many people obviously are terrified by nightmares, and it can be a real wake-up call to many people to realize that although we are absolutely terrified with our nightmares, the biggest healing and transformation comes when we face the fear of the dream, or face the person or animal or thing that is causing us so much fear in the dream, because it's really something in our life that we're fearful of that we're not facing. And the only way that we can deal with a fear in life is, of course, as you well know, to confront it, see it for what it is, and learn from it. So your dreamy mind is very with you here. It's really keeping you close, getting you to face this thing. And I love that there's a tall chest, which is like a filing cabinet, because he was tall too, wasn't he?
He was, yes. Yep.
So again, it's almost a feeling to me that the tall chest is another reflection. There's the tall man, the dog is another reflection of him, and the tall chest seems to me to be another reflection of this energy as well. And again, you see it's a filing cabinet with documents in, and I don't know, filing cabinet and documents, that begins to sound all very male energy to me as well, dealing with the work and the outer world and documentation. And you get the feeling that he has lived here himself before. Of course he has. He's been a part of you in the past, hasn't he?
Yes, indeed. Oh my goodness, yes.
And you threw him out. You wanted to be in your female space in the middle of the forest, doing your personal development work, but definitely getting into your feminine, and you didn't really want any of him coming in, but you recognize that he's been a part of yourself and he's been long gone and he's coming home, and it's terrifying.
Oh, goodness gracious me. I can't see how I didn't see all that, but I didn't, you know. And I think, you know, as I say, my ability to do any interpretation at those early days was, pretty negligible. Yeah.
Well, I think you know, that's partly it, Jan. You know, we all start out, and it takes a while before we gather the skills. And I know that you've got incredible skills now. But I think the other side of it is sometimes the more frightening dreams are more difficult for us to see, because, you know, our more frightening dreams are getting us to see our own deep stuff that clearly we don't want to see. And so that is harder. And, you know, and that's why quite often, even when you're very, very, even when you've got, you're a very skilled interpreter, and you've got, or therapist, and you've got a current dream that you're grappling with, it's why it can be helpful to get another professional to walk through it with you, because they are more capable of seeing the shadows that you definitely really don't want to see.
Yep.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yes.
So well, your dream persevered, so we'll persevere a bit more. Next time he comes, he brings the dog in as well.
Yes.
So next time you're even though you're terrified, the dream is showing you actually letting this energy in and observing it, even though you're terrified. And so now you're at the stage of, okay, I will also let this animal instinct feeling coming in, this wolf-like energy. Even though you really don't like the smell of it, it's really unpleasant and it feels like death. And I guess, can you actually remember, can you define the smell more than death? Do you remember back that far?
No. But what I did find curious was the fact that a smell came in a dream. Mm-hmm. Now, that hadn't ever happened before. I mean, I can't say if I was been in the past dreaming of flowers or something, that I would smell them. This is the only time in any dream that I have been aware of a smell.
Yeah, that's fantastic. It is definitely one of the last senses that we often engage in dreams. So as an aside, obviously for most of us who are sighted or were born sighted, we have visual as our main element, and then auditory, and quite often touch, and then taste and smell can be in some dreams and not in others. And once you've actually mentioned it, like there'll be several hundred people listening who will think, oh, I've never smelt anything in my dream, and most likely in the next couple of months going to wake up and go, actually, I smelt something last night. Because sometimes when you know, it like triggers that.
Yeah.
And I also think, you know, smells are known to be such a heavily related to our memory, aren't they? You know, you can smell something, you know, lavender, a cigar. I mentioned lavender and cigar because they tend to be smells that we associate with a long time ago. You can smell something when you're awake, and it really takes you back, shoots you right back to a memory, doesn't it?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, and I guess a dog has a huge sense of smell and will navigate by a sense of smell too. So I guess it's taking us back to our evolutionary roots when we can smell out things. Oh, that's like intuition, isn't it? We smell out where we're going, what's happening. But I suspect that there may have been another smell there that may or may not have linked back for you in your memory to something in the past. But apart from that, the smell of death, yeah. And we talk about the smell of death, and it's likely that in the dream you thought, oh, the smell of death, because you could sense death in the dream. And I'm going to go into that symbolically. And because you might have thought in the dream the smell of death, then your smelling part of the brain might have gone, oh, cue smell of death, and brought in a smell at that point. But the main point here, Jan, being that at this point in the dream you let in the kind of animal instinct male side energy into your dream here, and were prepared to face it even though it was terrifying and it was distasteful because it smelt bad. So it's facing something that you really don't like the smell of in your life, something you didn't want to face 30 years ago. And the smell of death suggests the smell of an ending, doesn't it? In dreams, death is not necessarily a bad thing. You know, to change and to grow, we need to let go of the old in order for the new to come into our life. We need to let die certain habits, certain beliefs, certain emotions, even sometimes certain memories, so that we can bring in something fresh and new. Although sometimes we may dream of death and it may be alerting us that we are depriving something wonderful in our life from energy, and we're suffocating it or killing it off, and maybe it's a wake-up call to bring this energy back into our life. And it may well be at this point in your dream that smell of death was you have been letting your male side die. It's time to not do this. This is a terrible smell. Or it might have been more along the lines of, well, you know, things are going to have to change around here. There's going to have to be some deaths and some births.
Yes, indeed.
And that is when, yeah... Then, so your dream then finally brings us to the next night when the moon is out and it's very, very bright. So again, you're looking at this from your female, intuitive, nighttime perspective, and you decide to lock the front door because you don't want them to enter. So there may at this stage be a sense of, I'm getting some boundaries in place.
Yes.
I've been to open. Mm-hmm. Or there may have been a sense of, no, I'm not going to face this thing. I'm really over it. I really do not want to face this thing. And he does try the handle, and you're really, really terrified. And I don't seem to have written anything after that. What happened after that?
Okay, he tries the handle, and I watch as the handle turns, but nothing happens after that, in as much as he just walks away.
He walks away.
Yeah.
So we'll never know at the end of that dream whether it was a sensible resolution at that time in your life to put down more boundaries while you acclimatized the idea of getting to know and welcome your male side more, or whether you perhaps should have left the door open and faced it a little bit more. But there's a sense of he did walk away. He didn't try to blow the house down or
set fire
to it. Yeah. So those are some thoughts interpreting that dream from so long ago. Would you like to comment more?
Well, I'll I'll give you the title that I gave it, and it was called The Hunter.
Mm.
Now, you know, as I say, looking back over 30 years, I thought to myself, why did I call it that? Because he actually wasn't hunting me.
No. You
know, it was my perception, but he wasn't. I mean, there was nothing, you know, really horrible about what he did. But listening to you talk is quite amazing. Have we got a little bit of time left?
Absolutely, yeah. Okay. We're hanging out to hear what you're going to say.
Well, just before we came online, I was sitting looking at some notes that I'd made about the date, and it was 1989, and I suddenly thought, oh. So what had happened the year before that, I was 42 at the time, and that the year before that, a year before that, I had got divorced. And I had started a business with a partner, and it seemed to be going fine. There didn't seem to be a problem. And then one night, I jumped out of a dream so quickly, and the word Barclays was just front and center. And I thought, why am I awake? And what is this word Barclays all about? So I got out of bed and didn't have a computer at home in those days. And so I went to the phone book and looked up Barclays. And there was Barclays Bank. Now, I'd been in partnership with this chap, as it turned out, for about, 7 or 8 months. And the day before, he had said to me, we have a problem. And I said, what's the problem? He said, well, we owe quite a bit of money. And I said, how can this be? And, you know, anyway, I was quite scared because I had 2 children and a house and a mortgage to support and all that sort of thing. So anyway, that night I had this dream about Barclays. So I rang my accountant the next morning and I said to him, Max, we've got to get hold of the books, because his parents were doing the books and I had no reason to believe that there was any problem. And I said, no, I think when you, because in the dream I was sitting in front of a ledger and there were these periodic payments, Barclays, Barclays, Barclays. And so we got hold of the books and sure enough, it was Barclays Bank, and he had bought himself a second-hand Daimler. And he was siphoning off the money of the business.
Oh.
So, look, you know, from that dream, and that only just came to me this morning, you know, like minutes before we came online, and I thought, dear God, you know. And so this dream that I couldn't understand and didn't make any, anything to me, suddenly I saw what was going on, and you were interpreting it absolutely spot on as to what was going on in my life at the time. So,
That's and you've made amends since.
Yeah, but I must say to you that because I had gone into business, I hadn't worked for a long time, and so the business was a challenge for me. It, you know, I had to work, I had to start the business, and so my male side was very front and center at that stage.
Mm.
You know.
It's really interesting, you know, what you say there, because I know some people were listening and thinking, oh, well, so the male wasn't really her inner male. It wasn't a part of herself. He represented the guy that you were in business with, and he it was right that he was, you should have been aware of him and locking your door to him. Yeah. And to some extent, you know, that may be true. There may in the dream be that feeling that you were being, made wary of this energy around you, even though it didn't appear to be hurting you, that there was something that you needed to be able to, you know, check, and the reference to the filing cabinets and everything. And all that may well be true and helpful. But as always, it's all, the most helpful thing of all when doing dream work or personal work of any kind is to look at, yeah, so what does this say about me inside? You know, what does this say about my inner world? And, you know, as you've beautifully described there, you know, your inner male, your world of work did feel undermined, and I don't think you quite used that word, but you know, you would have been scared for quite a while to, well, how do I go from here and how do I support my mortgage and my two children in the other reverse order, my two children and the mortgage, and how do I go out in the world and do this? So, and one might argue with hindsight that, you know, we're all human, we all do exactly what you did there, but one might argue in hindsight that if your inner male had been, if you'd been more connected with your inner male, you might have been more interested in checking the books and noticing the Daimler and everything as well. You know, we've all done things like this. And no one's saying what a terrible mistake you made. We've all made huge mistakes in our lives. But with 30 years between now and then, I think we can look back and go, that dream was also saying that having that tall blonde guy on side within you would have been pretty helpful.
Totally. I mean, I am a bit of a slow learner, I've decided over the years.
I think we all are.
Yes, and this was definitely a sort of situation that, you know, perhaps a bell should have rung for me, but, you know, didn't. I can only be thankful in a way that I had the second dream. Which actually saved my bacon because what he did had ramifications for the business, and they weren't good.
In many ways, I wonder whether this first dream, you know, gave you the courage to begin to be ready to have the Barclays Bank dream later, you know, because you were already facing it, but you were facing the dog, so it was like the more instinctive. I'm not really fully aware and conscious of this feeling around me of the smell of death, the end of my business, whatever it was. But I'm sort of facing it. I'm sort of handling it too, because there was that pun on the handle at the end. He was turning the handle but not getting anywhere. Right. So, right. And in many ways preparing you. And I don't know, of course, what happened between this dream and when you had the Barclays Bank dream, but I would guess quite strongly that there would have been quite a lot of unconscious mind shifting stuff going on for you, preparing you to begin to take up the sort of male energy feeling and have that dream about the Barclays Bank. And that was a very male energy in terms of, we're not talking men and women here, of course, we're talking yin and yang, a very yang kind of thing to do, to phone your accountant and get onto it right now, you know, to follow it through. So, you know, the first dream, the one we've discussed today, I would have said got you into the frame of mind for that.
Yes, yeah. It was a time of great, well, I'm going to say turmoil, because so I had so many balls in the air, so to speak, and I really did feel under pressure. There was no doubt about that. Was I doing the right thing? Was I not? You know, but the second dream was the dream, that if I hadn't had that dream, goodness knows what would have happened, you know?
Oh, you would have had another dream and another dream and another dream, because something inside you was onto this. Unconsciously, you were onto it, you know, the dog, the wolf dog, there was energy there. You were just waiting for it to burst into consciousness. Mm-hmm. It would have nagged at you until you got it. But if, you know, well, rolling back all that time, if you had had that dream and done dream alchemy on it when you woke up, what are some of the possibilities? Let's have a look, because obviously it's too late to do dream alchemy now. You've totally got your life sorted now. But I guess I would have been thinking of doing some kind of visualization or artwork around making the tin hut a big and beautiful house that you're very comfortable in. So, you know, first of all, transforming that symbol of the small self and with a tin that you associated to being financially compromised, to transform that symbol into a beautiful house which felt abundant and luxurious, and then to invite, scary though it might be, to invite the tall male in and find that he's actually a really nice person. And you know, we'd move the alchemy from there, that he helps you, he sits down with you by the full light of the moon, and you see something, you see something that it's really helpful to you, something along those lines. So in other words, changing the story of the dream and changing the symbols to nudge your unconscious mind to a different perspective, to rewire your brain away from I'm really scared of my male side, or I don't want to know what's going on in my business, to I'm comfortable, I feel comfortable, I don't necessarily need to rely on other people. I've got a beautiful big space here. I've got the light of my moon and my feminine with me, and I feel safe about inviting my male side into this. And if you'd done that, that alchemy, that just might have shifted things a little bit quicker than maybe they did, you know, gave you that feeling of strength and insight. But it sounds like you were well onto it with the Barclays Bank, and you picked up your life from there, didn't you?
Yeah. I mean, you know, curiously, I didn't connect the two dreams together at all, you know. And I think maybe that was because I had called it the hunter, and I think a lot of times with me anyway, I tend to just focus on the obvious, and I miss the sub things that are there because I've just called it that, and so, oh, well, you know, you sort of dismiss it. And increasingly, I look underneath things now.
Yes.
Underneath their things, you know, with the dreams.
And look, that's the absolute magic, you know, and we all start that way with our dreams, looking at the obvious or the surface level layer first, and even relating to it. But it's when you go deeper that the magic really happens. When you called it, when you said you called it the hunter, I wrote down hunter's moon because of the moon in the dream as well. So there may have been a connection there with a hunter's moon. But if you were to retitle it now, after today's talk, what would you call it?
Okay. The phrase, something this way comes.
Ah, I like that. Something this way comes. And I love that incorporates the open-endedness of the energy too. Like, it doesn't say whether it's good, whether it's bad. It's just something that you can go along with and welcome into your life. And, you know, there may be people listening in saying, why, what's all this about a dream title? And I think I'll write a blog on this for the Dream Academy for this week, because I always encourage people to find a title for a dream, partly because sometimes, not in your case, but sometimes we instinctively choose a title that helps. You know, so if you had originally called your dream something like Scared of the Man, that might have been a bit of a clue about being scared of your male side. But primarily the main reason for titling a dream is that if you're keeping a dream journal and you've got loads and loads of dreams, it can be helpful to keep an index. So you index your dreams not by the date, but by the title, well, by date and title. So you can then scan through, oh, if you want a few years later to look back and find that dream about the hunter, you'll remember that's what it's called. And, you know, you might not remember whether it was a year ago or 3 weeks ago or whatever, but you will remember the title. And so you can go through your index that you might then have alphabetically arranged. You know, you can get very OCD about these things, but, you know, a title can help you to organize in whichever way feels good to you to find a dream quickly. So that's why I often encourage people to give a dream a title, simply because it's a way to find it again. Otherwise, you're like, oh, didn't I have a dream once, something about a moon and a dog? I don't know when that would be. But if we sometimes remember the title. But I do also encourage people to retitle them after they've done the work, just as you did there.
Yeah.
Because it's that retitling can then carry the energy of the insight from the dream.
Well, look, you know, I have read your Dream Alchemy book. And what you're suggesting now is a terrific idea, quite frankly, because I've had a recurring theme dream, not a recurring, you know, the dream changes all the time, but the theme is always there. And as I was reading through my journals coming to this particular dream today, I thought, my God, I've been having that dream literally for about 25 years and had it recently, and still don't know why it's there, you know. So that's going to be something that I'm going to really sort of get into quite shortly, why I'm having this dream.
That's great. You know, that's lovely.
But you know, your suggestion to keep an index, I think, is a fantastic idea.
Yes, yeah. There's a few large number of people listening going, oh, I've got to do an index now, I've got to go back. Don't get stressed. You know, you can't really go back and index all your old dreams. It just, start from today and going forward. Yep. Thank you, Jan, for being a fantastic guest on the show today. You've really entertained us with your fairy tale-like tale and your amazing delivery. You had me on the edge of my seat.
Thank you. Look, it's been my absolute pleasure, and gosh, I've got so much to look forward to. It's really wonderful.
Thank you, Jan.
Okay, bye-bye.
Wasn't that lovely? And I'm sure you got a lot out of that. It was a beautiful dream to listen to and explore. And I think, you know, one of the many things that came out of that was this notion of we can too easily dismiss a dream of by thinking that it's perhaps a little bit more literal or easily saying, oh, this relates to that in my life, or this relates to this. It's the going deeper into the different levels and aspects of your inner being that really, really, really bring up the treasure that and the insight that can shift your perspective in ways that really do change the way that you experience and navigate life. You know, things turn out so much better in the long run. And it is a skill and it is a craft and it does take time to learn. You can't just really, you know, learn it overnight. So you learn it by recording your dreams, writing them down, and then you might like to do one of my courses at the Dream Academy at dream-academy-online.com, which takes you through the steps that I use and teaches you how to apply those steps to your own dreams and arrive at your own interpretations. And those courses are video-led. So, you know, you meet me over there on the videos and there are notes to download and charts to download as well. So there's everything that you need to help yourself to learn how to do this for yourself and to help others as well, of course. And the other thing I just want to say just in leaving is that Jan referenced at the end my book, Dream Alchemy, which was published by Hachette published by Lothian Books in 2003 and republished by Hachette in 2007. And I've had quite a lot of people saying to me, I can't get your book, Dream Alchemy, where is it? And the thing is, it was edited, updated, because it was quite old by now, updated and republished by Hachette as the Dream Handbook. So it was published by Hachette as the Dream Handbook last year and also published in the UK by Little Brown as the Dream Handbook as well. So if you're looking for the Dream Alchemy, it's okay, all is well. You can read the updated version if you go to where you normally buy your books, online, your online retailer, Amazon, Book Depository, wherever it is, and you look for the Dream Handbook by Jane Teresa Anderson. So that's it for another month. Also remember to look at my website if you want to find out more or listen to more episodes of The Dream Show at janeteresa.com. You can also always listen to the last 10 episodes on iTunes or on your podcast app. And the next episode, episode 221, if you're listening to this in real time, is out on the 13th of September 2019. Thank you for listening to yet another episode of The Dream Show. If you'd like to be a guest on the show, go to janeteresa.com and you can easily find the form to fill in to say, yes, I'd love to be a guest on The Dream Show, please. And we'll take it from there. I'm Jane Teresa Anderson.